things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you, Jenny?
I'm good, Taylor. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm full from dinner. You fed me. It was delicious. Thank you.
It is my calling in life to feed you, my best friend.
We're trading off now. I'm editing and you're feeding me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we both come to the conclusion that it's like a very balanced, symbiotic relationship.
100%. Yeah. Absolutely. So today, we have a very special episode.
This is another new kind of thing that we're trying out. We hope you like it.
Yeah, please let us know if you like it, if you hate it.
Have we decided what we're calling it?
A mashup episode?
A mashup? Yeah.
Yeah.
A spooky remix.
Yeah. Because we might not always do it like this. Like, today we have a true crime paranormal.
Yes.
But they might be, like, a conspiracy true crime. Mm-hmm. They could be a cult conspiracy.
Yep.
Basically, any story that has two very different sides to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We decided we wanted to put them in an episode. And instead of normally we both would cover different things, we're both going to cover two different sides of the same story.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the mashup episode. We hope you like it.
If you don't, so sorry.
Sorry.
But not that sorry.
Tune in next Friday. We'll give you something that you're used to on Fridays.
Yeah, because this is going to be coming out on the third Tuesday of the month.
Yep.
The first Tuesday, we're going to have our grab bag episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third Tuesday is going to be our mashups.
Yep.
And then our regular episodes every Friday.
Yeah. Because why not?
Yeah.
Go big or go home.
Yeah. So if you're lost on the internet and you don't know where you landed, mm-hmm. you are listening to A Little Bit Grim.
Yeah. Welcome.
Well, we're glad. It's also known as the Heebie-Jeebie Amateur Hour.
Yes. We're here to bring you the heebie-jeebies.
All of them. And today, we're bringing you the heebie-jeebies in the form of Villisca Axe Murder House.
I'm so excited. I didn't know a whole lot about this until you brought it up and you said that this should be our first mashup episode. Mm-hmm. So I got pretty excited about research, something that I'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with the true crime portion. Mm-hmm. And then, Jenny, you're going to do the supernatural spooky stuff.
My wheelhouse.
After
you give us the facts.
The facts.
Which is your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
We're very
dividing and conquering.
Very in our element in this episode.
Absolutely. Okay, so the Villisca Axe Murders. Just as a PSA, there is going to be some kind of graphic descriptions of things kind of midway through. I'll give you like a little PSA before they happen, but
I love that. I can't wait.
Me too. But I did put a little graphic description warning before one of my bullets here, so you can skip ahead if you need to, if you have little people in your car. I hope not, because we swear sometimes.
Yeah,
so
you can get a little F-word heavy around here. We're trying to be better.
We are. We're gonna try to tone it down. We're only one glass of wine in at this point.
Things look promising.
Yeah. We're also going to record another episode after this, which might not be so promising, because there will be more wine involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, we've noticed that.
We're just going to take it one glass of wine at a time.
Take us for who we are.
Or leave us. But don't review us. If you don't like us, don't review us.
Yeah, but if you love us, you can review us on anywhere you like to stream your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Please leave us a review. We've had some really, really kind folks leave us reviews, and it really makes our day happy.
Lots of really good constructive feedback, too. Yeah. So we're just so happy to be here and telling you about really terrible things.
Yeah.
So dive into it.
All right. So the events that we're going to be talking about are going to take place on June 9th and 10th in 1912. Which is going to be pretty close to when this comes out. It'll be like the third week. No, it'll still be May. Just kidding. Okay, so June 9th and 10th, 1912 in Villisca, Iowa, which is in the southwest part of the state. The Moore family is who we're going to be talking about. And there are six people in the Moore family, Josiah and Sarah, mom and dad. Josiah is 43, Sarah is 39, and they're four children. They have Herman, who is 11, Mary, who's 10, Arthur, who is 7, and Paul, who is 5.
Is she Sarah with an H?
Sarah with an H.
That's where the power is.
Good head on her shoulders, for sure. On June 9th, the family went to a church function in the evening, and the two girls were also invited to stay the night at the Moore's home. The sisters were Ina, who was 8, and Lena, who was 12. Lena or Lena, I'm not sure. So after church, the family and the two sisters walked back to the Moore's home and arrived between 9:45 p.m. and 10 p.m. The next morning, the neighbor became concerned because the Moores hadn't come out to do their morning chores yet. So the chickens hadn't been fed. Nothing had been done outside. Thank goodness for nosy neighbors. So she went to the house and tried the door, but it was locked. And she called Josiah's brother, Ross. And in these days, a locked door was super uncommon. So she felt like that was just very weird.
Oh, suspicious that somebody locked their door.
The door was locked, and she didn't see anything.
That's wild. Also, I would like to say that if somebody called the cops every time they suspected I was not doing my chores, the police would be here frequently.
Absolutely. Like, I forgot to mow my yard this week, and so I have dandelions popping up all over the place.
I'll leave them for the bees.
Nah.
What? Taylor, the bumblebees. They need the dandelions.
My curb appeal.
You are not an apartment community. You're not trying to sell your house.
No, I'm not, but I also...
It's those, like, white, puffy, blow away in the wind
weeds.
They're
good for wishes. Stop trying to micromanage your lawn.
Yeah, I'm going to mow it. Okay, so she called Josiah's brother, Ross. Ross came over and opened the door with his copy of the house key, immediately called back to the neighbor and told her to call the local peace officer, Hank Horton.
A peace officer?
Yes, a peace officer. That is how small town Iowa we are.
Aptly named peace officer.
Right. I picture him just like walking around town with a big smile on his face, just like, howdy do, how's it going, way to go, like high-fiving kids off the school bus, just having a dandy good old time.
Heidi-ho, neighbor.
Heidi-ho. So this poor guy, Hank Horton, I imagine he has never seen a dead body in his life.
Bless him.
So this is where the graphicness comes in. Horton enters the home and discovers that all 8 people had been brutally bludgeoned to death with an axe.
Bludgeoned?
Yes, I will get to that.
Okay.
So they believe the killer found the adults first and took out the most threatening people. Josiah was killed with the sharp end of the axe, and he was the only one who was actually killed with the slicey-dicey part.
The anatomy of an axe.
The slicey-dicey part. His face was so sliced up that he was missing his eyes.
Oh,
I'm so sorry for that.
Yikes.
No thanks. Everyone else was beaten with the blunt end of the axe.
Why?
I don't know.
See, I don't want to say, like, the only reason I'm mad about these unsolved cases is, like, I want the rationale from the killer. I need to understand why halfway through your crime, like, your MO changed.
I don't know. I would imagine that he probably had some kind of vendetta against Josiah, and that's why he got the most, like, force.
Okay.
And there were...
Or, like, the most threatening, like, if anybody in the house could stop him, maybe him. So he wanted to, like, make sure.
Yeah.
Sliced and diced.
There was descriptions of, there were, like, marks in the ceiling from where he had taken the axe back so far over his head that he hit the ceiling before, like, coming back down.
Was he a giant?
Apparently houses were small back then, too.
Like, oh, okay.
You know, I don't think that they were used to, like, 9-foot ceilings.
Wow.
I don't know. But at any rate, there were marks on the ceiling from where the murderer had, like, gone. Ugh.
Ha.
Yeah, unfortunate. Okay. Investigators believe that everyone except Lena was asleep when the attack happened. Lena had defensive wounds, and she was laying across the bed in an odd way. Her nightgown was also pulled up, and she didn't have any undergarments on, so they suspect that she may have been sexually assaulted. But this is 1912, so they didn't have the same kind of forensic...
They had no way of...
...telling.
Oh, ew. But, oh, sorry. That...
Yeah.
That made me feel really gross.
Lena was 12.
Oh. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And it's like, we like to think of, like, people back in this time period as, like, very wholesome. They, like, whistle their way to work at the diner where they're very happy. And, like, these awful, terrible things are, like, a modern problem.
Yeah.
But
I mean, this has been happening forever, and I think this family was very wholesome. Like, they went to a church function the night before, and in some of my research, it said, like, Sarah had helped put on this church function, so she was so proud of it and so happy to be going and bringing her family. And, you know, I think that, you know, them staying out between, like, 9:45 and 10 o'clock was probably a late night for them, so they were
a big deal out there in Villisca, really, Iowa.
Really celebrating.
Sure.
So, that is what they found when they got there. The curtains were drawn on every window except two windows, and they just weren't drawn because they just didn't have curtains on them.
Oh.
But these were covered by the Morth's clothes.
Oh.
So the intruder had to have gone in and then covered them, and I would assume that he had to have done that before he committed any of these murders.
Hmm.
Unless he did it and then realized people could see in and then close all the blinds, but
did he do this, like, in the middle of the night?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, like, as the sun was rising, he was like, oh shit, I better cover the...
Maybe. Because
you'd think, like, if you came home and all of a sudden your shirts were nailed over a window, you would be, like, alarmed.
Yeah, true. So, in addition to two of the windows being covered with their clothes, the victims' heads had their heads covered with bed sheets and clothes after they were murdered. So, some form of trying to cover them happened.
There's something, and I'm not going to know, like, the exact rationale. You probably do. About, like, in Mindhunter, the rationale of when you cover a body when you're done with it is, like,
remorse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that... that's how they found all of them. So they were all covered, but it was just their heads were covered, which I, you know, that's where they received most of the trauma was to their head. But the victims, okay, yeah, the victims had their heads covered. The doors were all locked. The police discovered two burnt up cigarettes in the attic, which made them believe that the suspect was actually in the house and waited for the family to go to sleep.
Oh, ew.
Yeah.
God.
So, remember when I told you, like, it was weird for the door to be locked?
Mm-hmm.
That means he had to have gotten out somehow and then locked the door behind him. So, they think that he probably had a key. He probably got in when the house was unlocked and then took a key with him.
Oh, like, they left it unlocked when they went to the function and then came.
Right.
Oh, and he, like, snuck in?
Yeah. And was hiding in their attic and waited for all of them to go to sleep.
A fucking ew.
No thanks.
No thanks.
I hate it. I don't like it. I don't want it. I remember when I first moved into my house, I kept hearing something in my attic, and my attic's above my bedroom, and it sounded truly like a raccoon or a mouse or something was up there skittering around.
A little critter.
And I forced my husband to, like, go peek up there, but in my head, I was like, bro, there have been, like, people hiding in people's attics. Like,
those are the most horrifying stories that I have ever read.
Thanks, Reddit.
Yeah. Yes. They're always on Reddit.
Yeah.
And they're fucking horrifying.
It's all horrible. I hate it so much.
Have you seen the security videos of, like, the woman who lives in the... And she sneaks food?
Yes! No! I hate it! No! Oh, my God. I can't. No.
Pay rent. If you're gonna live here, pay rent.
Ooh. No. Thank you, ma'am. I hate it. So, we come to find out that, in fact, there is not anything living in my attic. It is a tree that is on the outside of my house that is, like, hitting my house when it's windy out.
Oh, my God.
So, I was super
peeved about nothing.
Yeah, super hyped up about actually nothing. Okay, let's get back to this terrible story. The news spread around town. And in true 1912 fashion, what does everybody do? Show up at the crime scene.
For fuck's sake, these people didn't know how to act.
Nope. So everybody came to the house. Police very quickly lost control of the crime scene.
Well, I mean, how many of these people have ever seen something so horrific like this?
Right.
Or a dead body.
Just goes to show that, like, people nowadays are a little bit more...
Desensitized
and... They understand that there's a big obsession in our culture with true crime and murder and, like, the worst things that could happen to a person.
Because, that's why we have this podcast.
Yeah, and there's 100,000 other podcasts like us or who tell similar stories.
With millions of listeners who all want to hear. Mm-hmm. So the sensationalism is something that's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and this curiosity has always been around. But in the early 1900s, there was no media outlets that were really, you know, easily accessible, telling the story in a conversational way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, people showed up because they were curious. And they didn't understand forensics or DNA or fingerprints, really anything like that yet.
Oh,
so
my God.
They were just trampling around the house with all of these bodies in it.
That is absolutely horrifying. It's not out when this episode comes out. But there's a story that is going to be coming up in the near future that is like another recent example of police not properly containing a crime scene.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I doubt that they had DNA testing in 1912, but like now that is such a huge problem if you can't contain the and get like cross-contaminated evidence.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
Poor Dewey or whatever the deputy's name is, who's just like, stay out of here, guys.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about some suspects. We have, I think there are six main suspects. Andrew Sawyer was a transient, and he was a suspect simply because no one really knew him. It was small town Iowa.
That sounds
so
right.
So the outsider, of course, is like, he did it.
Yeah.
He wasn't a regular member of their community. He did get a job working outside with a crew, and his coworkers said that he was obsessed with the case and was very jumpy. And he slept with an axe next to his bed. Sounds like me.
I have an aluminum bat next to my bed in case shit gets real in the middle of the night.
I slept with scissors for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Really long time. And yeah, I am also a jumpy person. I have anxiety.
Yes. Well.
Leave me alone. So, and we just talked about, everybody was obsessed with this crime. Everybody went to see it, but they singled him out because he wasn't a regular member of his community. So when he tried to make conversation, of course he was talking about the number one biggest topic of conversation in their community,
that
which is these murders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And the axe that was used in the crime was actually Josiah's axe. And everybody had an axe back then. Everybody.
What?
Like, that's how they did all of their work. Like, an axe was as similar as you and I having a hammer.
What?
Everybody had an axe.
Well, listen, if you have an axe, you don't need a fucking hammer.
Right. You got both.
Yeah. Use the blunt end.
Right. So, that's in all of the, like, axe murder cases, everybody's like, oh my God, it was an axe. That's so crazy. They might as well be using a chainsaw. But that is something that is so commonly found back then that this was not unusual.
Weird thing.
It would be very similar, like, if somebody was shot.
Or, like, here in Indiana, if somebody was shot.
Everybody
with their
has
own gun. Yeah.
Everybody has gun.
Or, like, a butcher knife. Everybody has a butcher knife.
Right. Yeah. So, while nowadays we're like, an axe? What the fuck? Nobody has an axe.
It would be wild if somebody, like, here in 2020 got axed to death. That would be bizarre.
Yeah. So, back then it was not that unusual, actually. Okay, so for him to have an axe next to his bed,
it's not
necessarily a key to his undoing. It's just he also didn't want to get axe murdered.
Sure.
So he kept his axe next to his
bed. How do you fight an axe murderer?
With an axe.
A bigger, axier axe.
Yep. Sharpened. He was dismissed as a suspect when he could prove that he was in a different city during the time of the murders.
All right.
So, legit. All right, the next up, you're going to love this, Reverend George Kelly.
He did it. I already know.
Suspicious! All right, so Kelly was a traveling minister and was in Villisca the night of the murders.
Ooh, did he travel away the next day?
Mm-hmm, sure did.
Huh?
As an adult, he was accused of peeping and several times asking young women and girls to pose nude for him.
Oh.
He did it.
It was him.
Yeah.
He, like, sexually assaulted a 12-year-old. It's him. I made up my mind.
Blech.
On behalf of the city of Villisca, it was Reverend What's-His-Face.
Yep. So, on June 8th, he came into Villisca to teach at the Children's Day services, which the Moore family attended on June 9th. He left town between 5 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. on June 10th, which is the morning the bodies were found. Hours before the bodies were discovered, Reverend Kelly had confessed to the murders in court.
What?
Yep. But the jury didn't believe his confession.
Why? Because he was a reverend, and God forbid that, like, somebody you admire and look up to and is a staple in your community does something heinous? Is that why?
Probably.
Okay.
So, in the weeks following the crime, he became increasingly interested in the case. He wrote letters to the police, investigators, and the family of the deceased. Oh. So now, like, we know people who put themselves in the middle of a case
are
involved.
Yes.
They cannot not know what's happening.
Well, it's like that guy, you'll remember this, that this guy killed his neighbor in his apartment community, and he was interviewed on the news.
Mm-hmm.
That guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens so often.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, and he, so listen, if Sarah was the one who put on this like spectacle mm-hmm. at the church, she must have been working closely with him. So he was probably familiar with when the family was going to be home, when they weren't. Was he there during the whole program? Like, yeah. Did he leave in the middle and go sneak into the house?
I don't know. I don't know that much about it.
Did he, like, arrange with this family to, like, be like, oh, after this all winds down, like, I'll meet you at your house and we'll have a nightcap, and didn't tell anybody. And so they let him in, and then he axed them.
That could be it, too.
Anyway.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's good conjecture. So in 1914, 2 years after the murder, Kelly was arrested for sending obscene material through the mail.
What?
Yep.
Like what? A picture of a woman's ankle?
He was sexually harassing a woman who applied for a job to be his secretary. Gross. Then in 1917, Kelly was arrested for the Villisca murders. Police obtained a confession from him again. However, it followed many hours of interrogation, and Kelly recanted. After two separate trials, he was acquitted.
They tried him twice?
Yeah, so, like, the first one, the jury didn't believe him.
Like a mistrial.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he was acquitted in the second one.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Reverend George Kelly.
Boo on you, guilty. Reverend George Kelly. Listen, I will tell you, this is something my very dear beloved mother has always taught me. And I live and die by this. You cannot trust men who have two first names.
I like agree
George
with that.
Kelly?
Mm-hmm.
No. Like a Jason Logan?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
If you have a first name as a last name, I don't trust you.
And there's a lot of serial killers that have three first names. Like, their middle name is a first name too.
Yeah.
And it's all three first names.
I'm going to compile a list and I'm going to post it on Twitter.
Can't trust them.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So our next suspect is Frank Jones. He was a Villisca resident, and he was a state senator.
Ooh, I love intrigue.
Oof, political intrigue.
Yeah.
Pass. Josiah worked for Jones before leaving and opening his own store. So I think it was like a hardware store or something like that. And he ended up taking business away from Frank Jones because everybody wanted to go to Josiah Moore's store instead.
Oh.
So, reportedly, Frank Jones was real mad about Josiah opening his own store.
So petty.
Yeah. So, that's kind of all I have for Frank Jones. However, he is related to our next suspect named William Mansfield.
Hmm.
So, it's theorized that Mansfield was hired by Jones to kill the Moore family.
What? Like Frank, a hitman?
Yeah, because Frank Jones was a state senator, so he didn't want to get his hands dirty.
Oh, for the love of everything.
Yep. So it is believed that Mansfield was a serial killer already. So he was... Okay, this gets crazy. I forgot about this. I wrote these notes like a week and a half ago. All right. He was suspected of killing his wife, infant child, and his parents-in-law in 1914.
What?
Yeah.
This happened in 1912?
Yes.
So two years after these murders.
He was suspected of killing his whole family. With an axe.
Ooh.
Yep. He is also suspected in the double homicide of Jenny Peterson and Jenny Miller in Illinois.
Hmm.
He was suspected of committing the axe murders in Paola, Kansas, 4 days before the Villisca murders, where a husband and wife were killed.
Oh, boy's got a routine.
Uh-huh. There was an axe murder in Colorado Springs 9 months before the Villisca murders that Mansfield is suspected of being involved in, where six people were murdered.
Oh, he likes to do it in batches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There was another axe murder in Ellsworth, Kansas that he is suspected of as well, where 5 people were murdered.
Oh my god.
So being able to like plot him out and be like, he was in all of these places when all of these murders took place with the same weapon, and I believe all of these had the same MO of he covered up the windows with their clothes and covered their heads afterward as
well.
There
you go.
So.
All right. I can see that.
Yeah. Other murders reported as possibly being linked to these crimes include the numerous unsolved axe murders along the Southern Pacific Railroad from 1911 to 1912.
The Southern Pacific Railroad?
Yeah. And basically, during this time, like, train hopping was a big thing, where transients would, like, hop on the train and then get off wherever there was town.
I like to think in a past life I was a transient that lived on a train. It just is like a lifestyle that really
calls to you.
Yeah, I want to have like a bandana tied to a stick with like one book and my eye spectacles.
Yeah, and then 2 weeks in and you couldn't get your nails done and you would be dead.
They didn't have acrylics in 1912.
You'd find a way.
Yeah, I probably would.
Okay, so there were the unsolved Axemen of New Orleans killings, as well as several other such murders during this time period.
That he was linked to all of them?
He's suspected of them.
Oh my god.
I know. So the only one that I don't know if I believe is the Axemen of New Orleans, because that one, I believe in that one he said, like, he actually made contact with the city and was like, you have to play jazz tonight or I will come through and I will kill like 12 people or something like that.
Oh my god.
And in none of the other murders did he, like, threaten the city like that.
It's New Orleans. Of course they're going to play jazz. That's what they do.
Right.
Like, New Orleans is going to be like, no jazz tonight.
Yeah. One of us will cover the Axemen of New Orleans eventually.
That's going to be you.
Okay. Dibs. A grand jury opened an investigation in 1916 and Mansfield was arrested. Payroll records, however, provided an alibi that placed Mansfield in Illinois at the time of the Villisca murders.
Yeah, but that's like not too far of a jog.
Right. So, another one bites the dust.
All right.
So he was released for lack of evidence and later won a lawsuit.
What?
Yeah, because he was, I guess, tried? I don't know. But he won, back then, in 19-whatever money, $2,225.
Ew, he's rich.
Today would have been about $60,000.
Oh, okay.
So he did pretty good for himself.
You can do something with that.
Yeah. All right, so next up is Henry Lee Moore,
who is... You can't trust. Too many names.
Nope. He is not related to the Moore family.
Okay.
So, just same last name. He was convicted of the murder of his mother and grandmother several months after the murders in Villisca. His weapon of choice was an axe. That's all I have on Henry Lee Moore.
Okay.
Next up is Sam Moyer. He was Josiah's brother-in-law. During the investigation, they discovered that Moyer would often threaten to kill Josiah. An alibi proved that he was not in the area at the time of the murders. And me, I was like, is this... just
are we
conjecture, like somebody being like, oh man, I'm gonna kill you if you don't stop feeding my chickens after 9 a.m. Like,
these chickens run on a tight schedule.
Yeah, you can't feed them just whenever you damn well please.
No.
I have no idea. That just sounded very...
So is that Sarah's brother?
Okay. Yeah. To me, that just sounded very brother-in-law-ish.
It kind of sounds
joking
like...
around.
I always get... like, long lists of suspects, I find very suspect. just because it feels like law enforcement is literally grasping at straws because they have no idea.
Who did it?
Yeah.
Right. So, last but not least is Paul Mueller. Mueller?
Mueller.
M-U-E-L-L-E-R. Bill James and his daughter, Rachel McCarthy James, are the authors of a book called The Man from the Train. And they believe the Villisca murders are a part of a much larger series of murders that they were all committed by the same serial killer. So all of those murders that I listed earlier in Kansas and Illinois.
Yeah, they fit the same.
Right.
And it's kind of in the same like quadrant of the U.S.
Yeah. So they conclude that the murderer was Paul Mueller. who was the subject of an unsuccessful year-long manhunt as the sole suspect in the 1897 murder of a family in West Brookfield, Massachusetts, who had employed him as a farmhand. James started his research as an attempt to solve the Villisca murders, and with his daughter, found archival newspaper stories detailing dozens of families murdered under similar circumstances across the U.S.
Ooh.
The Jameses thus believe that Mueller, I don't know why I'm having such a hard time pronouncing that.
It was just Mueller.
Mueller, okay. Was guilty of the Villisca murders as a part of a killing spree that lasted over a decade, killing at least 59 people in 14 separate incidents. They find common features to these crimes, many of which are found in the Villisca scene. So the covered windows, the covered heads.
Oh, God.
The killer selected families who lived near railroad tracks, hence their book's the title, seemingly struck in ambush at about midnight while the victims were sleeping. Used the blunt side of an axe rather than the blade to strike the victims in the head and the face. Used the axe found at the victim's home and left in plain sight after the murders. The killer covered the victims with blankets to prevent blood splatter, covered windows from the inside of the house, and locked the doors before departure. When he was suspected of crimes, often, not always, a sexual motive directed toward a pubescent girl was found. So that ties Lena.
Yeah.
Being partially disrobed. And unfortunately, as you mentioned earlier, this crime is still unsolved. They don't know who did it. So
I hate to say this, and this is like an incredibly dark thing to say, but can you imagine how easy it would be to be a serial killer back then?
Oh my God.
There's no DNA. Nope. There's no credit card statements to track you. You can live a totally, like, transient lifestyle without anyone ever being the wiser. It's such a huge, like, recently discovered...
Yeah.
Like, it's wild to me. Like, how many... I feel like serial killers are few and far between because they get caught before they get, like, too involved in their...
In their craft.
Yeah, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we have so much technology and our, like, forensics have really come a long way, but, like... How many serial killers were actually active?
Right. And with the trains running the way they did and people being able to hop on and hop off.
Yeah.
Virtually undetected.
Right.
That's crazy.
And when you pair that, because this wasn't too long after, like, the gold rush and everybody's, like, moving out to California. And so a lot of people with criminal records really moved out, like, to the West for a new start, but, like, carry bad habits with them.
Right. And it was before a time of... really interdepartmental police force work. Like, that didn't even really come along until the 80s.
There was no cattle. And even in the 80s, it was, like, a hot mess.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm not calling the good old boys in San Diego.
No.
I'm not going to call
them. I hate the 49ers. Oh, I'm not calling them. Oh,
my gosh.
Right. And even now, I feel like it's still easy for things to fall through the crack of, like, a national catalog.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't even imagine back then.
Yeah. So... this is a very unfortunate, gruesome tale. I wish we had more answers. I wish we knew who killed these eight people, especially because there were six children involved. That would have been a really horrific thing to discover, and the evil that had to have been in the soul of the person that committed this crime had to have been big evil.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned big evil.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm...
Sorry, that sounded joyful.
Big evil.
Let's be clear. I am interested in big evil. Big evil doesn't give me joy. But tell me everything about it.
I just think that... It's such a... I mean, like, podcasts on the Axe Murder House is, like, a dime a dozen. Everybody covers it. Every paranormal investigator goes to this house, and it really just speaks for itself because it's mysterious. It's unsolved. It's, unfortunately, one of those cases that really will never be solved. And, like, its own notoriety is really the only marketing it needs. And that terrible, gruesome story that you just told is, like, fuel for the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And people still have this draw to come and see and be a part of this place that bore witness to the worst type of humanity. And it's really vastly interesting to me in the way that paranormal hauntings follow places of tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scale of skepticism you can fall in like regards to haunted places where something really terrible has happened. And it's like a residual memory. Like some believers say that when a location bears witness to something really terrible, that there's a residual memory of the trauma tied to it, and it just kind of festers in the corners, like mold that like grows in the cracks and into the structural support of the building. Or on the other side, the more skeptical side, it's the law of attraction that can explain. If you're walking into a place and you're like, this is haunted, then any knock you hear, any scratch that you get is, you know, it's going to...
sign of a haunting.
Yeah, it's going to kind of try to explain those experiences away. But in regards to the activity that I'm about to tell you about, I'm just going to let you draw your own conclusions.
Always.
So there are claims of some benevolent spiritual activity there.
Okay.
That these experiences really kind of get pushed to the wayside, and it's kind of hard to find anything more about like the spirits of the family there, because the heavy oppressive and significantly darker energy gets all of the attention. Spiritual energy falls into different categories, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you know the ones: poltergeist, demonic, orbs, interactive and intelligent energies, or residual. So this background spirit activity in Villisca is kind of what's called residual energy. That if you think of like old school, you put a DVD into a player, but it's like scratched up and it skips and it plays the same like 3 second thing over and over. That's like residual energy.
Okay.
So it doesn't respond to like when you ask for it to knock or you ask for a sign or anything like that. But the evil, malevolent energy is intelligent and will respond and will lash out.
No thanks.
Yeah, it reacts to the ever-changing environment. It responds, and it's a little unnerving. So after these crimes occurred, the new owner of the house tried to rent it out to different tenants, and he offered 6 months of free rent to anybody who would move in.
Oh no.
I know. We're trying to run leasing specials here. Occupancy is low. We're trying to drive NOI and cash flow.
We call that giving away the farm.
Yes. They're giving away the farm for 6 months.
Is this where we get that saying?
Yes. Yes, from the fullest gas.
Oh no.
I'm going to call my regional and tell her.
We found the origin of the saying.
Mm-hmm. No more leasing specials. They're scary. So it went through a series of tenants, and they all left after an incredibly short amount of time they just recount negative experience after negative experience. And a lot of it was not even so much as like active, voices and screaming and being dragged down hallways. It was more of a personality change would happen in the men who lived there, and they would become irritated and then overly aggressive, violent.
Ron wearing the Horcrux.
Ron wearing the Horcrux. That's what it was. Frodo wearing the ring around his neck for too long. That's what it was.
Hi, Donut.
Donut has jumped up on the table to listen to the spooky.
Hi, buddy.
And he's probably going to mess something up here in a moment, so just hang in there. We'll try to edit him out. So it went through this series. All of the male energies kind of got a little squirmy, and they're a little suspect. Until two sisters, Patty and Linda, they lived in the home with their parents and their other siblings.
How old are Patty and Linda?
Right now, they're like mid-60s.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
So this was back when they were little girls. They lived with their parents and their siblings, and they recall being tormented. And as grown, I watched an interview with them the house. And as grown women, they still experience unreal terror about being in the house. Patty couldn't, they started the interview process and she broke down and had to leave and she left the property.
Oh my God.
She was like, I'm so sorry that I can't continue this interview. I can't be here. It's overwhelming. So when they first moved in, you know, they're trying to get settled. It's a new family, new big family in a house. So the two sisters slept on the floor in the living room.
Okay.
And they recall one of the first instances of paranormal experiences that they had was they heard a little girl crying and screaming while they were sleeping on the floor and everybody else's in the bedrooms in the house. And so
that is where Lena and her sister were. They were downstairs.
Oh, no, that gave me, like, real goosebumps.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Facts.
Weird.
Yeah. Okay. Continue.
See,
this is a mash. This is good.
This is good mashup energy. I like it. Okay. So, they were sleeping in the living room, and they heard a little girl crying, screaming, struggling. And so, what do you do when you're a kid and you, like, see something spooky? They told their mom in the morning, and their mom was like, it's just a new place. Like, you're just that whole chestnut. Just calm down. It's just creaks.
It's just the house is old.
It was windy. You're fine.
It was just a tree hitting the side of your house.
That's you.
That was me. So, when did they move in? Did you say that?
They didn't say, like, a specific year. They said that they were little girls. So, I'm assuming probably between, like, 8 and 10 was kind of how they framed it.
So, is probably a few decades after the murders.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I would, with their age now, I'd probably say this was probably late 60s, early 70s.
Okay. Got it.
That they moved in. So, that was quick math.
That was something good.
Future Taylor, fact check that math for me because I was a music major and didn't do math for a reason.
Neither of us did math, so please, if we ever bring up math you can tell we're doing right now in the moment, I guarantee it's wrong.
It's the fucking football field all over again.
We're not good at numbers.
At the numbers.
Or math.
No.
We're good at talking.
We're emotional creatures.
Which is why we're here.
This is why we're not mathematicians. Okay, so they continue to have these little things, and it was mostly Patty and Linda. Okay. And none of the other family members were, like, willing to come, or, like, the siblings willing to come have this interview with the paranormal investigators.
All right.
And they recall, so their father was a hunter.
Okay.
And he had a lot of hunting knives that, you know, he used frequently because it's, like, in the wilderness in Iowa.
Yeah.
So he, the dad, was sitting at his workbench, and he was sharpening his knives. And Patty and Linda were there just, like, watching, hanging out, doing whatever. And as he was sharpening, like he has done 100,000 times before,
yeah,
they see the knife twist in his hand. And they said it was like a force held him. And he was watching his hand and looked like he was trying to, like, stop it, but he stabbed himself.
No.
In the hand with the knife. And it caused pretty significant damage to his hand. Of course, there was, like, blood all over.
That's what you call some big evil.
It's big, oppressive, big, fat, nasty evil. Right. Unnecessary. In the retelling of this, Linda was talking, and she was like, this house, like, never really belonged to us or our family. She was like, this house belongs to the murderer. He has staked his claim in here. And anybody else that has ever tried to live here knows that the house does not belong to them.
That's horrible.
It's absolutely awful to think. Because it's like a pretty house. And it's like really held up really beautifully. It's been, like, preserved well. And it's sad to think that there's just some...
No one's going to be able to enjoy their life there.
No. Something that happened over 100 years ago.
Right.
Now is still affecting this place and attracts all of this negative, oppressive energy that really just seems to have gotten worse and worse and worse over the years. They say he has laid claim and will stop at nothing to drive out any human who tries to live there and bring joy and peace. Bouts of weakness, lightheadedness, vertigo are all daily claims on the paranormal tours that are given at the Villisca Axe Murder House. You can also pay $200 and stay the night there.
I have that as a fun fact if you didn't have it. I have, like, a part in my last page that's like, fun fact if Jenny doesn't share it. And I have, let me look. Okay, overnights pricing is $428 for groups from 1 to 6.
Oh.
And then if you have more than 6 people, it's $75 per each additional person.
That's such a reasonable price.
Reasonable rate.
That'll be our first giveaway. You and two friends. Listen, you and two friends can come stay with me and Taylor overnight in the Valeska Axe Murder House as soon as travel ban is lifted. Like, raffle it. How fun would that be?
$428, Jenny.
What, you split it halfway? It's like $250.
Yeah.
You get to stay in a demon house. You can't put a price on that. What a fun time.
How about we give away a sticker?
You're so lame.
Okay. All right. I am just saying
that give away a haunted sticker.
I am a chicken. I am going to be the girl that is up all night long. I'm going to be like slamming Diet Coke at 11 o'clock at night. Like, cannot go to sleep because if I wake up and there's a demon over me, I'm never going to be the same.
I'm going to be there with a Ouija board and a stick of Palo Santo like, what the fuck is up, demons?
And I'm going to be like, put that away! What are you doing?
It's gonna get in touch. Up? It's me, your girl, Jenny.
No.
Very different vibes.
I am the Ryan of this group and you are the Shane.
Yes. Yes. It's the most apt
except
way.
You are the believer version of Shane.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
I love his conspiracies. I just have to admit. Okay. So back to spooky.
Let's get on track. We got off track.
So when touring now, all of the mirrors are covered. I don't know if you mentioned this.
Mm-mm.
But when they went in the next day, all of the mirrors in the house were covered with their clothes and stuff by the murderer.
I did see that as a part of the facts, and that's actually something really common that happens in murders, like in houses.
I could probably understand the rationale behind that. They don't want to watch themselves be a monster.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what happens. There's a lot of mirrors that are supposedly haunted because of that they didn't get covered during a brutal crime. And so a piece of the murderer's soul gets attached to the mirror.
Mirrors are something, like, in my own personal, like, witchy beliefs, are things that I don't really like to tangle with, and I will probably cover black mirrors in a future, maybe like a grab bag or something. I'm not gonna make a huge to-do out of it because that freaks me out.
Yeah, there's mirrors freak me out. I won't look at a mirror if it's a dark room. I
don't like having mirrors in the bedroom.
I don't have any mirrors in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Yeah, it's... Yeah, gives me the heebs. So, I'm taking a page out of your book. I don't think this episode will have aired yet, but I'm doing a haunted review.
Yes!
Yay. So, this... I have two, but I'm going to start with this one. This was 5 stars, and it was left 5 months ago.
Oh, shit.
So, here's... It reads, I have been to a lot of places like this in the past, but this one is the real deal. I'm certain some negative energy, not entity, latched itself onto me during this visit. I can't stop thinking about it, dreaming about it, and having visions as if I were there as a victim.
Oh.
I could really feel the life in the death of this place. The second we walked into the parlor, I felt the heavy, negative energy. It made it hard to breathe, and I felt nauseous. This is the first time in my life I have ever experienced that. I have heard it said about heaviness of a place and negative energy, but didn't know what it meant until this visit. I have literally now experienced that. If anything else, the furniture and decor which set the stage of the era was neat to see. My regret is that I didn't have an actual tour with a guide to fill me in on the story. When I went there, I had no clue of the story as my sister surprised me with the trip. When we arrived, it was 20 or so minutes past closing. I live in Kentucky. The lady working there was very kind and said that they would let us take a quick peek inside, but didn't have a tour. So for half price, we went in and looked around. It was very kind of her to do so. There was a group of paranormals there. I'm assuming he means like paranormal investigators.
The paranormals just hanging around.
Not like a Bigfoot and an alien and like crickets. Right.
Oh, I wish.
There were a group of paranormals there to spend the night and they stepped aside for us, which is also appreciated.
Everybody in this community is so kind.
Midwestern hospitality. This is really a must-see. It hits the creep factor as an 11 on a scale of 10.
Oh, shit.
And a thank you to the couple who bought this house years ago and saved it from demolition. This is history, education, and entertainment rolled into one and an experience I will probably never forget.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So the next one is really short. My son and I went through the house with another woman and her two small children. She took a picture inside the attic and a face appeared in the window of her photo on her phone.
Blecky.
She showed it to Blecky. Blecky with the good hair. She showed it to me before she darted out of there and didn't look back. I tried to capture the same thing, but it could only get orbs of light.
Bummer.
Well worth the drive from Omaha.
All of us Midwestern weirdos driving so fucking far.
Everybody else is like, a 5-hour drive, I think I'll fly.
And we're like, that's some really good, like, music. And that's some good podcast you can catch up on. That's your alone time.
Like, for us, Nashville's like 8 hours away. And I think of it as a weekend trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8-hour drive, road trip.
I have properties in Iowa. And I was like, I mean, I could probably drive there.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be that bad. And right now, with the coronavirus being...
Corona.
Crazy. I'm not getting on an airplane. So for me to be like, 10 hours to Iowa? That's not a big deal. I'll do that.
Yeah. It's a fun time. Sightseeing. You can stop by Villisca.
Yeah, just a little stop by. A little drop by.
Just a very casual, haunted paranormal tour. You'd be so mad at me. You better not go without me.
You would be so mad. Yes, I would. I never live it down.
Well.
That was fun. I like the mashup.
You let us know if you love or hate the mashup. Maybe we can, like... We're hoping to work it into our regular routine of things, but obviously we want to give you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
So if you hate it, tell us kindly.
Yeah.
And if you love it, tell us aggressively.
Loudly.
And all over social media.
Share with your friends.
Yeah. All of them.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. And go find us on the things. We're on Instagram.
Twitter.
We have a Facebook group. We have a Gmail if you want to send us any of your personal stories.
We have one personal story that's been sent to us.
Yes.
And we need like a couple more to make a full episode. So send them on in.
Yeah, I'm real hype about this.
It's really wild.
I've already read the whole thing to Jenny because I was freaking out all by myself.
It's absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
So you have to send us your spooky stuff so we can make a whole episode.
Yes, please, please, please. We really want to make that like a part of the grab bag.
Yeah.
So
I love it. So, you know, be spooky forever.
Yeah.
And we'll see you in the next episode.
See you on the flip side. Bye. Goodbye.